Good
Brighter, shining on and on.
This is Jane Hoffman with Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to read three verses in Matthew 5 tonight, and then we're going to examine the basis of Islamic hatred, which propels global reach and with an intent to kill, basically. Matthew 5:21. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, "You shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, 'Raka,' is answerable to the court, and anyone who says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and then you may be thrown in prison. Truly I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny." That's verses 21 through 25. Verse 33 says, by the way, I swallowed some water the wrong way and it went down the wrong tunnel, and I'm having a hard time talking. Again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, "Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks of you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." John is on the air now, and he's at home tonight. Hopefully we won't get any late night hit prank callers with 4-letter words. John, I'm going to let you in, and then I'm going to try and play a clip from a Belgian woman who wrote in pink chalk on the sidewalk, "Love is my religion." Good evening, John. You're on the line. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? John, you're on the line. Can you hear me? Let me try. John,
hello.
Can you hear me?
Greetings,
yeah,
June.
I thought maybe there was something wrong with my volume.
No, actually, I was on speakerphone across the room. I arrived at home at 12:05. Took a shower, combed my hair, got some chocolate and some milk, grabbed a Bible, grabbed my backpack, moved it to the side, and trying to get online and call you in 5 minutes. So I didn't do too bad.
Okay, well, if you need another 30 seconds, I can read the last verse.
I'm among you.
Okay,
I've
so I read
joined.
Matthew 21. Good. And like I said, you know, if you're ever in a pinch, you can, you know, just, I knew you were going to be calling tonight. It didn't have to be right at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
However, I swallowed water wrong right before I went online, and I'm having
Isn't
some trouble
Isn't that the craziest
here.
Thing, that one speck of moisture or dust can literally choke out a person? Your body just goes into total cardiac arrest. It happens to me occasionally, and when it does, it's the most annoying thing, because I've worked jobs such as customer service where you talk all day long, and, you know, that might happen a couple times a year where you're like, hold on just a second, and you're like, and you know, the other person thinks you're dying. It's like, it's literally a speck of dust or a crumb from a sandwich. It's the most irritating thing, but your body just goes, you know, I must survive, I must eject the enemy.
Well, the funny thing is I've been guzzling this black cherry sparkling water all night,
uh-huh.
And for some reason I've been wanting to guzzle more and more because I'm at work and I have to stay awake, and I think I overdid it because it's like pop, it makes you want to burp. But I don't know, it has some powerful substance in it that I can't define.
Really? What are the contents of it? Is it mineral water?
It's black cherry sparkling water, and the only thing in it is carbonated water and natural black cherry flavor. But it knocked the crap out of me, like you said. So
Oh, yes.
What we're addressing tonight is people's, it's not just people's desire to kill in the name of religion, but it's people's desire to kill to awaken people. And I'm like, I don't know if Islamic people are really trying to convert anybody. I think what they're trying to do is send a resounding message across the world that they're upset with certain civilizations, and that their projection of God, it is like a warning. But I don't know what they want people to heed. So let me just play this 1 minute clip, and then maybe you can get a sense of what I'm trying to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Here we go. It's from Brussels. Hundreds gathered to let camp.
Why love is my religion. A very simple message. In these extreme moments of violence, these things that we say every day are in fact containing a lot of sense. I wanted to be here and share this very difficult moment with people of my city. There's a lot of different nationalities, and we are very open-minded. We accept everyone, and this doesn't have to stop just because of terrorism.
That's it. So basically, it was a young Belgian woman who wrote Love is My Religion in the square near the subway where the people got killed. And across the board in multi-ethnic cities such as the one you live in, I'm sure there's at least four nationalities at your church alone. You know, people don't separate on a daily basis within their profession. But when it comes to these reminders that people are trying to create a division line, where are they trying to go with it, and what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, a very good question. Couple things to consider to put things into perspective, and that is, what percentage of Muslims kill people? And same thing with Christians or any other faith. Probably, I would say it's maybe 1 or 2% of the radicals. I could be wrong, but I think 98% of people, or 90%, or whatever it is, of you go to Mecca, you go to Saudi Arabia, go to anywhere, and these people live their lives. Their aunts and uncles, their grandfathers, their moms and dads their students. They're regular people. But it's the radical extremists. It's those in the military. It's those that are take orders from leadership, too, some of them. Or leadership doesn't condemn what's being done. They condone it, or they just allow it to go unchecked. Same thing with, you know, people will say, well, Christians are violent, or they've killed this and that, and they've owned slaves. It's like, I've never owned slaves. How many people here have really owned slaves, you know? Or how many people in this current age, even historically, have killed anyone as a Christian? Not that many, unless you're a soldier. So, you know, that's one thing to consider. The other thing to consider is the faith. Who leads it? Like, Christianity is led by Christ. Did Christ kill anyone? Never. Not when he walked the planet. He was advocating a peaceful existence and love and forgiveness. Muhammad was different. He put together an army of 10,000 men and marched into Mecca and killed anyone who opposed them. And that's kind of how most things, most military operations are. You put together an army, whether you're Americans or Russians or Chinese or Muslims, and you go out and you kill anyone that opposes you or that is your opposition. And so that's just a man-made, that's how we fight. So I think that's normal.
Well, there
natural.
Have been times, and I'm not just trying to target the Muslims. There have been times in histories where the Europeans have been hell-bent on going to get the Holy Sepulchre in the Jerusalem area, have made, you know, 1,000-mile journeys down there and they retaking the land from the Muslims. But the fact is that the reminder of the desire for people to kill is real, and you see it in... I don't want to bring up Donald Trump, but I'll just bring him up in one sense tonight. The vitriol in his speech, I was watching a speech of his tonight on YouTube by the young, it's called TYT, the Young Turks. They're kind of like a three-panel group of men, young men who aren't that well-known, but they're media-driven, but they do have, you know, over 75,000 listeners per episode. But basically... they're trying to examine why Trump is screaming at people, like in the rallies, to get rid of certain people, just people by appearance that don't look like they belong, they fit there. And one guy was a Marine, signed up to join the Marines, and he posted a picture of himself next to a Vietnam vet pushing a black woman out of a rally, and the Marines decided not to take him as a recruit because he was in the long delayed program or something like that. So he's probably a senior mm-hmm. and planning to join in 12 months. But the Marines have now rejected him because he projected on social media that he was pretty much in line with hating another group of people and it's against their doctrine. So basically that kid lost his chance to be in the service just because of being in a socially positioned place where he did not want people, he wanted to present himself as a pro-Donald Trump person that just likes certain groups of people. By the way, John, we have a caller in from the 419. So why don't you talk a couple minutes while I screen the call, okay?
Okay.
Oh, wait, he just hung up. So
wow,
well, you know what? Last night we had prank callers. Okay.
Right.
And I'm not.
And I missed
I'm not
it.
Taking
I love
it, I'm not
prank
taking
callers.
It, I'm not taking chances tonight where somebody screamed out the N-word 10 times last night,
oh,
and
no
then they
way.
Also said Jews and Spics, and they didn't say much else beside that. They called me a four-letter word, too, and I hadn't even gotten two-thirds of my sentence out.
Well, they had a potty mouth.
Wow. Yeah,
we'll
and
have
we
to go
gave
on a time delay.
we gave this person a second chance too. They called back in. Yeah.
Wow.
So, and it was kind of embarrassing because our new caller was on the line and he wasn't aware of this type of behavior on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
I guess,
well,
the thing is let's dig a little deeper now. It's Holy Week, and today we celebrated Maundy Thursday, the night where Jesus was taken away from the authorities, and Judas pointed out who he was. And he was taken away, and he knew it was coming, but it was still not a fun thing to happen to Jesus, you know, while he was doing his ministry on earth. The fact that he was betrayed and taken away, and that one of his disciples arranged it. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, kind of to your point, I did try to give a little balance to the fact that most Muslims are peaceful. However, historically, there hasn't been really any history of the faith being able to be at peace with other countries and other people. The nature of the culture is to, as when they gain power, is to basically clamp down on the society that they are in. In other words, we talked about how the higher the percentage of Muslims in a area or a town or a city or a country, the more power that they have, the more control and restrictive it is. Like if you have 1 or 2% Muslim society, everything's cool, everything's laid back. You start getting 20, 30, and then you've got some friction and you have clashes. When you start getting over 50%, anyone who's not a Muslim is in trouble. They have, and if you get higher than that, 80 to 100%, you know, Muslim control, where the religious leaders are
like it's a theocracy.
Yeah, then you run for your life. There's not going to be any tolerance whatsoever. You are on your own, and that's the difference. You can be a Muslim in a Christian country. We're not running around with guns hunting you down. You know, you may have some extremists who will target or do a hate crime, but again, all faiths are welcome here. That's the beauty of America.
Well, even
now,
in Brussels,
even
Belgium, where they had suspected information of people who were potential terrorists and may have been involved in the French situations for Charlie Hebdo and November 13th bombing, they didn't even take those people out in advance. They waited like praying mantises and waiting till they committed a crime and then went to those apartments to search for things. So even in places where someone is Muslim and a suspected terrorist, they had rights. Now, in our country, it seems like the line of religious acceptance is thick or thin, but what's happening in America is the ideological framework of people and their belief systems. Like, let's just say I'm for Hillary. I've automatically created several enemies. So, it seems to be a hate game here, too. I don't know if it's going to lead to death or stampedes, but our caller last night, Albert, said that the security in Phoenix was playing a game with the Bernie Sanders rally. Like, after a certain point, they were increasing, like, the checks to see if people were carrying guns. You know, like, what are those things that you hold, like, to check if someone has metal on their body? Like, at one certain point, there was a line of 200 people, and they wouldn't let anyone else in. So
wow.
They basically denied all those people. They could have maybe come 5 or 6 hours from somewhere. Like, he came from the Coachella Valley to Arizona. Like, some of those people were denied the right to go to see Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders isn't emitting hate speech. But yet, the precautions of law enforcement are pervading people's right to assemble. So, I mean, like, I'm just giving an example that the fear factor is kind of reaching a lot of places in the first world. It's not like it was right after 9/11, but for some reason this election's bringing out a lot of similar traits of what Europeans are experiencing on an everyday basis, being afraid of Muslims. Oh, I remember what my last point was I was going to make about Trump is that, did you know 34% of the world is Christian and 23% of the world is Muslim? So how is Donald Trump going to bar 23% of the world? I'm not saying every Muslim wants to come to America in the next 4 years, but, you know, loosely affiliated relatives or people who want to visit, how is Donald Trump going to make that happen if he wins office?
He won't. He's just using that to align people for him or against him. And because there, a lot of people across the world, there, especially in America, were concerned and afraid. And now, in regards to what's interesting is you're asking, you know, why do Muslims kill? You know, there's a lot of things behind the scenes. Certainly, it goes back even further before to the time of, you know, between Jews and Muslims, between Abraham when he took to his wife Sarah, and God promised him that they would have a child. And they waited many years. They were getting old, and I think Sarah was about 90 and Abraham was about 100 or so. I mean, it was just, it was like it didn't look like it was going to happen. And they got impatient, so basically they decided to help God out. So Abraham is customary to, if you had a handmaiden or servant gal, that they would and you couldn't have a child with your wife, you would just take the servant girl in and take care of business. And basically that's what happens. Sarah, or Sarai, wasn't able to have children up to a while. So there was an Egyptian whose name was Hagar. And Abraham took her as and had a child with her. And the son was Ishmael. And through that child was God promised, because it's through Abraham, a great nation with him. And what's interesting is, basically, if I'm not mistaken, let's see. Ah, okay, here we go. And the angel of the Lord said, "Behold, thou art with child." He's talking to Hagar. And he says, "Yeah, you are with child and will bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. He will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man. Every man's hand will be against him, and he will dwell in the presence of all his brethren." And she called the name of the Lord that spoke to her, and, "God, thou seest me, or thou seest me." I'm reading King James. "For," she said, "have I not also here looked after him that sees me?" And so Hagar bare Abram a son, and because before...
And that's the Islamic race. It's the illegitimate offspring of Abraham, and their people are the book too.
"He will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him." And you think about, you know, just what this world is coming to. I mean, just a few years back when we had Operation Desert Storm, and you had Saddam Hussein, and what was he doing? He was launching Scud missiles at Israel. Just trying to shoot them off in their direction. Just crazy wild, like didn't have a good plan. And he was hoping all his Arab brothers would unite with him, because that was in his walls. They found in his buildings the stones he actually put on there. He was the second Nebuchadnezzar. He was basically going to be the new Babylon. He was going to be the new return of power. And so this is a bloodline thing, and this religion has come through that lineage. And what's interesting is, in a certain way, God's blessed it. God has given he promised to not only to Abraham's child Isaac, he also said to Sarah and Abraham, he says, "As for Ishmael, I've heard I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he begot, and I will make him a great nation. So there is a blessing because it's through Abraham that you'll see prosperity. And, it's like it's not going to go away. And people can say, well, I don't believe it. It's like, well, why is the whole world turning on this? Jews and Muslims. And, you're talking, things such as 9/11. You're talking things, happening where Iran is getting nuclear capability. And that threatens the whole world peace.
It is going to be the Muslim race that's going to perpetuate, the final confrontation in Jerusalem. Every Christian knows that. It's not going to be an economic force. It's going to be a religious force.
And people try to downplay, or whether you're atheist or whether you don't believe in the Bible, that's fine. I understand. But when you try to walk away from it, here it is right in your face. All this stuff going on, and the headlines. It's just like people are. It's like you don't believe the Bible's real. Just read Revelations about people being beheaded, and here we have it.
Well,
can
I interject
a
minute? Even from a geopolitical viewpoint, because I studied political science from the traditional nation state, like the border strategy, it was called the stag game and the rabbit game, where like countries strategically, like let's say, go back to the old European style of balance of power, Austria would align with France to piss off Russia, that kind of stuff. Well, what are these terrorists besides a preformed ideology like Don mentioned on one show down in Syria and Iraq? It's kind of like a moving set of people within the ideology that are trying to literally change city by city the cultural beliefs and mores. But what are they really gaining by killing random people? Like Albert said last night, why don't they attack world leaders or economic business heads or Wall Street villains? I mean, by attacking everyday people who earn $30,000 to $50,000 and they're just ordinary citizens, like a couple of days ago during this attack, a mother died of 2-3-year-old twins, and her husband lived, and her twins lived. I mean, are they just, besides scaring people, they're not really accomplishing much. And about 50% of their leaders have to be replaced every year, because through these terrorist attacks, they're killing, their leaders are being outed, and then they're, being thrown in jail and put on trial. So they're really, in the long run, they're really not gaining anything. And plus, they're not going to be forgiven by God unless they repent.
True, but most of the radical extremists are not that sophisticated. Now, it doesn't mean they're totally lack technical knowledge, but just it's kind of like when you have these crazy butt people who in America who get their firearms and they get some land in Texas, like Waco or wherever, or they go to Idaho or Montana, and they've got their own little commune with their own little fortresses, and they got their weapons, and they may do some crazy stuff, but you try to mobilize that kind of power into attack against it, like a president or a government official, you start dealing with the FBI, CIA, Secret Service, things like that, or other governments. They have their own little forces at work, so you have to be very sophisticated to try and breach that kind of coverage. But you can target anyone on the street, some mother, or you go into a business with a gun and start blowing up people. That's easy. But try to get to Hillary. Oh, in fact, Hillary was in Santa Monica. to do a little fundraiser. It's like, I think $2,700, you get a meal. I think that's the limit. But then they kind of work around it where for $10,000, you can be a co-sponsor and do a question and answer with
her. Are you talking about, like, refugee benefits or what?
Oh, I was talking about how Hillary is in Santa Monica, California today.
Oh, yeah, the max is $2,700, the gift.
Yeah, so they kind of work around. It's like, well, we want to make more, so for $10,000, you can be a sponsor and do question and answer with her, but it's not, this, you know, it's kind of like a different title, and it's supposed to be.
But you actually have to give $10,000?
Oh, yeah.
That's
ridiculous.
To be part
of the show. But, you know, I'm not bagging just on her. It's everyone does it, you know, both sides, everyone. It's just working around the details.
Yeah, I remember last election she had to give some money back because she raised so much. Like, you know, because sometimes the government has matching programs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to mention also with the Islamic State is that, you know, I do have ordinary Muslim friends in both the San Fernando Valley and the downtown L.A. area. They're just, if someone has food in their belly and a good income, they don't have a tendency to rebel. But I did date a Islamic male in 2012. One time he came over and I had an Israeli T-shirt on with a flag. And he was from Tajikistan and he told me to take it off immediately. So they are told from an early age that the Jews are the enemy, even in a, you know, like a sheep herding country like Tajikistan. So that's kind of frightening too. But I guess some churches in America are told that Islam is the enemy. So
I don't mean to jump subject, but I can't believe this is actually Hillary. I live by Santa Monica College, which is by Pico, and it's about 7 blocks east of Pico and Lincoln Boulevard. Basically, it's 13 blocks from the ocean. And they're saying here that Julia Franz and Chris Sibelman arranged this deal, and that they were at the corner, I can't believe it's by the Jack in the Box.
What?
Lincoln and Pico. Literally, they were 6 blocks away from where I live. I cannot believe that. And the fact that they put it on a map, it's like, hey, terrorists, or hey, you know, people who want to kill someone, here's where she's going to be. Wow.
Well, did you know you can go on any of the candidates' pages, and they have an itinerary? Where they're going to be for like the next 4 days.
Wow.
Did you know that?
That's
how all the protesters show up, like at the Donald Trump rallies, and how they blocked the freeway in Arizona.
Boy, I must have missed a lot of security, because I know when they come into town, literally, say, whether it's Obama or Bush or anyone, if you're going from the airport to downtown or wherever, they do a whole corridor. They literally have, dozens and dozens of police motorcycles that go intersection to intersection. They block it off, and they got sirens going off. So, you know, here comes this entourage of SUVs with blacked out windows, and they go zipping through there, and it's just like, wow. If you're trying to get through traffic, forget it, you know, because everything's going to get blocked up, and especially in L.A. It's crazy.
Yeah, I remember you used to complain when Obama came to town.
It shut down the whole town, you know, okay, I'm here to raise some money, and so just stop working, you know, for half a day. You know, if you were downtown or Hollywood or had to go crisscross, you know, in town. Now, if you lived in the valley or somewhere else, then you usually were okay, but it was just funny if you're in Century City, which is basically close to the west side of the ocean, you could see the whole setup. Sometimes if you didn't even know what was going on, once you start seeing all these motorcycles going intersection to intersection and blocking it off and sirens going, it's like, oh, here comes Obama. And if you're by Marina Del Rey or the ocean, you'll see these military kind of helicopters. Usually I'll send three or four of them. Go, then they'll patrol back and forth. And if you see that stuff going on, you know, like presidents come into town.
Well, I experienced some of it when Clooney had parties in the Laurel Canyon area. I lived
about
4 miles from him when I moved to North Hollywood the last 2 years. And one time I got stuck in the canyon coming back from L.A. I just wanted to mention at the end of the show, I uploaded the Master's Touch and Tell It to My Heart. But I also I have Hotter Than a Pistol and Alone. What song should I play tonight at the end of the show?
Well, kind of.
For Holy Week.
Yeah, I guess we should stay with something. I don't know, with all this political stuff, you know, it's kind of hotter than a pistol, but we could stay with Master's Touch or, you know, something like that. Or
yeah, it's funny. I think I'll play Master's Touch because that's the one I have in the system. If I play Hotter Than a Pistol, it's going to just have to be near the speaker.
Yeah.
So, I guess my commentary tonight, I did put a controversial title. I was expecting a few prank callers. Luckily, we didn't get a full-bred one, but my title of the show tonight is Muslims Who Crave Death Because They Can't See the Light of Christ. The stench of death at Brussels Airport was a sign that Muslim extremists crave and desire death. And the only reason I use those strong words is because people got their arms and limbs blown off. 270 people got injured. Over 31 was killed in two different spots, but 270 were injured too. And I'm really sure in the back of my mind that they really don't think through their actions. That it's one thing to resent somebody and carry a grudge around for 10 years and then blow a pistol at somebody, but to just kill a bunch of random people in a place. Actually, one of the three terrorists was a homegrown Belgian. He was 27. But the other two, one was flown in from Turkey last summer. So
I
don't know.
I would kind of go almost a little counter to that, and not to like be controversial with you, but I've never seen anyone that's an extremist, a Muslim radical, cry about what they did or be repentant. You know, maybe they have. Maybe they've said, you know, later on, hey, I'm sorry I did this or that. I've just never seen that. I've only seen people celebrate or make statements. They'll videotape something saying, you know, this is in retribution of this or that, or there will be more coming, or you know, something to that effect. And you know, they'll praise Allah and they'll do their little chants or mantras. And the point is, I've never seen a repentant person after, you know, destroying lives. So I think they feel this is part of the, once they get that far hardcore into it, they feel this is part of the process, and they feel almost elated that they are part of this, like vindicated, like they've been justified in Allah's eyes, and that they've accomplished what they should as a good Muslim.
Well, I think part of that is the mentality that they think that they're attacking places that they consider decadent societies that are like me worshippers, like, you know, like I'm only here to satisfy my own Western desires, and that they're just ridding a part of the world of more, they're transforming the world into true believers of people who only follow Allah in the framework of their minds. But that's, you know, you can't approach the human race like that. Everybody's flawed. And see, they don't have a central savior like they do in the Christian religion. They only have a benign, overshadowing God that gives them instructions.
Well, they also, too, you follow your leader, and you follow your leaders. And America has a violent past. So, I mean, we've done stuff, too. But so we follow in line with that. So in certain ways, we may have some Christian roots, but we're not Christian in our approach. By that I mean we're not using, you know, Christ role model. Instead, we're using what our forefathers, our military leaders did to get us freedom, to liberate us, and to take control of this country, the land, and, you know, even stealing it from the Indians. But we took it. And so basically, Muslims are just following how Muhammad did things. He made the religion grow by putting together forces and running around and taking countries and lands. And I mean, that's how it spread. So they've used it through force. And it's kind of they've been very successful at it. And that's been the history of them until someone arises, whether it's the Crusades or other countries that have banded together to squash or set back Muslim armies. And that's just the way they roll. So they're not being inconsistent. They're basically modeling what they've been taught, how to survive.
Well, I think the word is barbaric. Like, they don't form on the basis of national boundaries. This ISIS, especially the Islamic State of the Levant or ISIS or ISIL, they're forming basically on the roots of a new caliphate that they think is going to radicalize the world. Now, let's just say the right-wing Christians in America formed in a militant basis. Who knows, they might be sleepers in the Pentagon, but the fact of the matter is our country, you're right, poses enough danger in itself with our, you know, we're present in I think over 270 countries in the world with our military. We accidentally killed over 250,000 Iraqis in the 10 years that we were there. So I'm sure we're not viewed as an altruistic country that's benefiting the world. But I guess every international movement, whether it's the Americans trying to democratize the world, there always has to be a resistor faction, and in this case it's a religious one. But still, they are targeting the Jews and Christians and the white European nationalities. They're targeting the French, the Belgium, probably the English if they had a chance. You know, I don't think those London bus bombings were like in 2004. It was about 12 years ago. But they are targeting first world white European countries, whether it's America that have their inheritance, you know, their ethnic composite. They're not targeting people outside of Canada, the U.S., or Europe. Or are they?
I think they kind of target any place they can. They have the least amount of resistance, and it's interesting because Muhammad did say he got visions from God and Gabriel and angels had talked to him, and so he had if you call it a higher calling, it's one thing when I have my own incentives decide to, like, I'm going to go kill someone, or I'm going to establish the city of Johnny World, and it will be Johnny Land, and with Johnny rules, and, you know, kind of just create my own little Johnny society. But when you attach, like, God told me to establish Johnny Land, that takes it to a higher level. It takes it to something where other people, if I had kids, my children, and people and their children carry this on. So there's a deeper overtones to this thing where God, he says God basically told him to have these teachings and to do the acts that he does. And same thing with Jews, you know. So it's different, you know, if I say tomorrow I'm going to go bomb a theater just because I'm crazy and wacky. But it's another thing when I say God told me to put some dynamite at the movie theater and blow up people. That's how do you stop someone like that when they have that kind of motivation?
Okay, well, my point is that we're sitting here at night doing a radio show, and our maximum number of listeners is probably going to be 15 to 20 over the course of 30 days. It ebbs and flows, but sometimes we get 80 or 90. But then we got, Habib over in Syria forming a coalition of some sort. We have Bashar al-Assad killing his own people and pulling the Russians in to kill more. I mean, who's really making, how can we make a positive impact in the world beyond our words? The only way we can is by helping people on the street every day, like the real people in need. Because this world is going to hell in a handbasket, and there doesn't seem much to do to stop the destruction, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's going to, well, the world spins regardless of what we do, and sometimes we make ourselves or try to make ourselves more important than what we are. And, I mean, you take any person, you think about it, we're little dots on this big planet that's spinning around. Whether it's flat or round, I think it's round, but, you know, some people think it's flat. That's fine. Either way, we're a speck. And so no matter what anyone says or does, it continues doing what it's going to do. It doesn't matter if you're Julius Caesar, it doesn't matter if you're Napoleon, it doesn't matter if you're Hitler. Your time will come and go. So this stuff will come and go. But because it's a spiritual nature and a religious nature and it's cultural and it's kind of going back to it, it's even beyond that. It's a God sanctioned deal because, again, the lineage of this originates back to Abraham. And so you're talking a man that God promised to that whatever children he had would be endless and that it would be they would be influence the whole planet. It'd be a model of God's display of his grace and forgiveness. So you see that through Jews and through Muslims. You wonder what's going on here. It's to show us a bigger picture that God is still in control of everything, no matter what you and I want to do, no matter what the United States wants to do, or Russia or China. These forces, spiritual forces, are still at work. Some of them good, some of them bad. But you can't stop it.
That's a good point. Like, we shouldn't measure our significance by our audience. We can only measure it. What I'm trying to say is, can we really prevent someone from killing? Or, I mean, are we capable of, maybe we are capable of that, because last night we had a caller who said that we should only kill this group of people in this part of the world. And they weren't people who are generally being killed right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to repeat what he said. It was too devastating. But basically, then I was able to witness to him because he was foolish enough to stay on the phone long enough to listen to me. Now, the only thing I have to say is there is a Christian radio station. And by the way, we can end the show in 6 minutes with your song because both I'm tired tonight. There is a Christian radio station. It's called VCY America. It's out of Milwaukee, but they have satellite stations all over the upper Midwest and probably the East Coast too. Well, there's a guy who was Muslim born who became a Christian, and he comes on every day between 1 and 2, and he says that all Muslims, it says straight in the Quran, that all Muslims' ultimate goal is to destroy Christianity and the Western faith because in their eyes, we're a infidel religion. We're not the true religion. So even if they come to this country, resettle, build families, and have a healthy income enough to sustain themselves, their only goal is to ultimately take apart the Christian network, so to speak, because our country is 70% Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with that on some levels because I think some Muslims are intellectualized enough to know that there's a balance between learning, secular learning, religious practice, and just everyday living, and also the acceptance of people. But I just don't think that they all have this hidden motive to destroy, you know, the culture that they came to live in. What do you think?
I think that the I like history, and I really try to learn through history. I some people love science, some people like art and poetry, and all that stuff's great. But history to me just shows you what the nature of man is and how things will play out, because it's a repetitive revolving door of behavior. And so the whole history of that the Middle East is that we have people at odds with each other, and they can't reconcile through conversation or through kindness, and they use force, and that's not going to change. Now, it's been going on for generations after generations. I have a theory, and that is if you can't fix something in your generation or your dad's or your grandfather's generation, it's good to make your stand. It's good to state your case, but it is what it is, because human nature is consistent, and it's just the way we are. You have to come up with a new creature. One thing I did text to a couple people, that is, in regards to a person's faith, and that is, if the faith you have, if it helps you to be a wiser, stronger, rock steadier, or more forgiving person, embrace it. If it makes you foolish, unstable, and resentful of life, question it. When you start living a lifestyle in faith that is counter to life, meaning you're killing people, unless your life is being threatened, you know, question that. And just people are accepting something and they're just going with it, and they're not really thinking this through. They think that by force you're going to change people's minds. It's like, that's not going to work. Your heart has to accept and believe. And I can't make someone love me by taking a gun to their head. That's basically what they're trying to do. Just accept our faith. Here, you know, I will kill you. Well, you haven't succeeded.
I agree with that. Now,
you haven't succeeded
I do
in winning my heart
people,
or my mind. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I don't feel like my religion makes me a worse person. It actually, under God's guidance, I make less destructive decisions, like when it comes to gambling. However, when it comes to witnessing to people, I'm usually pretty careful, because if someone is gay or lesbian, then I don't want to say, according to my Bible, you're sinning. Like, I might address them on the way that they have their focus on God, or, you know, if they've given their whole lives over to Christ, or if they're, I might check on their obedience factor versus perpetuating their own desires. But I do think it is hard to witness to people who have a strong defense. Now, if someone needs a ride across town, that's an easy way to witness. But if people start questioning your philosophical point of view and asking for Bible verse backups, then you better know your stuff, because then you might be put on the spot. Right?
Oh, yeah. And I think you'll find that just that you have to win someone's heart for them to believe something. And so when you're using force, when you're using threats, you can get someone to comply. I mean, yeah, you put a gun up to someone's head and you go, believe this or read off a piece of paper. You see this all the time. You see hostages, and they're reading, you know, a statement like America is evil, and please stop, persecuting or doing this or that. And you know, the person's just reading a line, because they're going to get killed if they don't read off what they're saying there. And so it's kind of like that. You have to start with people's hearts, and I think that's where the frustration comes. Like, if I'm a Christian and I'm trying to talk to people about my faith and they don't accept it, it's very easy to get into a more resentful tone, like, well, just you turn or burn, you don't accept this, you know, you're going to go to hell, or, you know, God will judge you at the end of the of time. And some people jump into those kind of modes of just judging and condemning people. And that's not what the message of love is all about, and of forgiveness. It's about believing in your heart and embracing with your mind, all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, all your physicality. That's how you accept God and follow Him. So it's just the history of the Middle East, you know, is that they've used force to try and convince people to believe. And under the banner of Islam, they swept through, you know, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Palestine, Egypt, North America, Spain. And they've gone as far as Central Asia, Western India, and briefly into France. However, as it branched out, naturally other countries have felt that force and that threat and pushed them back. So you always have this kind of bubbling up, you know, back and forth of their faith.
I agree with that. I think, like, when you're just focusing on America and the people around you, there's subtle ways of witnessing every day. It could just be in your attitude. But I don't usually use the turn or burn strategy. And I did the other night in Gamblers Anonymous intervention as a joke, and people laughed because they were talking about a document where people are on one side and your side of the bridge, and you're trying to save them, and you're waving across the bridge, trying to show them that there's a better life apart from, you know, by leaving the other side. And then my counselor said, "I could see you, Jane, you know, waving really hard across the bridge." And I said, "No, I just yell out, turn or burn, you know, so then everybody laughed." But the fact of the matter is there's nice ways to treat people every day, and that's really only the true witness, because if you're crabby and you're behind the wheel, then there might be a tendency for you not to want to, you know, be congenial or be nice. So, but with that, I am having some issues right now, so I'm going to let you do your conclusion, and then I'm going to play the master's hand.
Cool.
What's your conclusion for this set of talks tonight?
In conclusion, basically, I take the approach of how God approaches us, and that is He gives us free will, and He doesn't put a gun to our head. At least not in this lifetime. There will be a time where every knee will bow, every tongue confess that Jesus is Lord. I believe that to be true, but not in this lifetime at this moment, in this current state. But the time will come at the second coming of Christ. So in the meantime, the message is good news. It's love and it's forgiveness. And it's about sharing that. It's not about taking a gun or a sword or a cannon and blowing people away. That's just not the call of Christianity. And people who use those kind of means under any faith, it's not the method that God has instructed people to use. So anyone who uses these kind of ungodly approaches, they're just evil, or they're self-serving. They're working in their humanity and trying to make a spiritual conversion to people, and that just doesn't work, not long term. The will of a person must be free to accept, to have love, and when it's coerced or forced, it's not love. It's basically being a hostage. And so I encourage all free thinkers, all people of free will, to examine what they believe. And again, if you find a faith that makes you a wiser, stronger, more forgiving person, follow it. But if it makes you counter to that, if it makes you unstable, resentful, foolish, makes you hateful of others, question it. And by all means, do seek a higher power, because this world will, in its own, outside of God, it will lead you to madness. It will lead you to bad actions. And I know just through life, when you get into an eye for an eye situation, you eventually will find someone in your path who will use violence. And your only resolution will be to use violence back. And if you're a stubborn person like me, that is not a good formula, because that will lead you into an all-out life-or-death situation. And that's why I'm a Christian, is because it gives me that buffer of reality that I can forgive, I can walk away, I can let things go. But if I did not have that, I can tell you, if you don't believe in God, you would pray to God that I believe in God, because the person I would be would make you ask for God's help. And I know people out there in the world that don't have the hope of Christ, of forgiveness and love. That's why they act the way they do, because it's a natural conclusion. If I'm not getting what I want and someone's in my way, I'm going to move them. And you give in to that spirit, you'll find yourself, I have had road rage, and I can tell you, I've been in the middle of the road in front of an SUV in my own, just with nothing but my tennis shoes and work clothes and a sack lunch, yelling and waving and so on to bring it on. It's like all they had to do is floor it and run me over. But that's what rage will do. That's what anger will do when you're trying to seek control and power. And that's what these religions, unfortunately, that's why they act the way they do. And thank God that I found, grace through God, and to let things go and to forgive and just to walk in love. And I encourage everyone to follow that path.
Yeah, I saw an analogy on Ellen today. I think these Islamic fundamentalists have the idea that if they keep participating in acts of terror, that they're going to perpetuate the coming of God in their eyes quicker. And there was a 3-year-old girl who was a really good gymnast on the Ellen show, and her father went to Korea for a year because he was a serviceman in the military, and he made a giant bucket, like a screw top thing that you'd probably put cheese balls in, but he had a whole giant bucket of kisses, and every day the little girl could take out one kiss, and it was called Kisses from Daddy. Well, she started taking out 2 or 3 kisses a day because she thought that if she took out more than one kiss a day, then Daddy would come home faster. Well, God's not going to come home faster if we start playing God and deciding who should live or die, or who's a pure believer or non-believer. What we have to do is maintain, and like you said with the road rage, that there's so much stress in the world right now that if you don't consciously take time away from doing activities that cause stress, whether it's driving over 25 miles in LA or, working 2 or 3 jobs at a time like we both do, if you don't take time to do like 15 minutes of yoga or take a warm bath, then you are going to kind of go nuts just with the everyday stress that we have in the world. So with that, I'm going to play the master's hand, and I'm hoping that there's at least one fundamentalist tonight who speaks English who heard this message, but also this radio show is for Christians who may have slipped in their faith or may be questioning their purpose in life. So I hope that everybody gains something from this and that you have a good Holy Week. With that, I'm going to pop into this music scenario. Here we go.
That was an abrupt ending. Do you have any final words, John?
Well, looking at history and anyone who has a little bit of time, just look up Muslim history in Europe. And it's interesting. I didn't realize this. I know that there were the Crusades, but just, and I'm sure there were a gazillion of them, but they have just listed here in this one section the eighth, like, Crusades, like the first, the second, the third. It's like, how many people die each time there's a Crusade? These are, like, you know, Christians trying to stop Muslims. So you can, and this is just in a period of from about, 1000 AD to like 1200. So, you know, over like a couple hundred years, just a bunch of, you know, back and forth, fighting and killing. Now, this is like over 1,000 years ago. And here we are.
Yeah, did you know that the Muslims controlled part of Spain for a while?
Yes. So you can imagine, this is like, you know, parents and grandparents and great great grandparents and great 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 grandparents. This just goes on and on. That's why I'm saying is, like, when you start looking at things through history, it changes your perspective. Like, this is, you know, until Christ returns, you know, 200 years from now, will we still be having this going on? Yes. Yes, because it's human nature. And yes, because God has promised to this lineage blessing and prosperity to both sides, Jews and Arabs. And the Muslim thing is an Arab thing. And they will be wild men. And you go, why are they like that? It's just the way they are. It's like, not everyone, but I'm just saying, you see these guys with the black hoods on, and they're talking very, you know, not sophisticated tones, and they get a knife and their sword and they start trying to saw a person's head off. I mean, give me a break. You know, what is that from? What horror? I mean, this is like a Stephen King. Like, it's as horrific as you can go. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, I think, like, part of the reason is because I wanted to mention one thing. The Arabics, did you know that they were the ones who created algebra? So anytime you want to cuss out the Muslims or the Arabics, you can cuss them out for creating algebra. But they did control part of Spain for a while. And there was a lot of upper learned thought created during the 12th and 13th century. And they also had centers of learning in Alexandria, Egypt, and also in Timbuktu, Africa. And the Muslims were often more tolerant at that time. They had, you know, higher education, and they didn't force one strain of religion upon the other. And there was a lot of progress made during those centuries. But unfortunately, they were pushed back out. And let's not forget the Persian Empire controlled everything from Egypt to Turkey and all the way into India at one point. But it wasn't necessarily just a Muslim influence. It was also a multicultural influence. The thing is you're right, that tension will always continue up until the day of Christ and the day of judgment, because not until Jerusalem is toppled down and the Muslim temple, that famous Dome of the Rock temple in Jerusalem, gets torn down will there be, you know, the final second coming of Christ. And that's why,
right,
I think the powers that be are beyond who's running for president and things like that. The powers,
well, kind of to that point,
because
your question, you know, the central question is, you know, like, what causes this, and, you know, why are they killing? Because it's in their blood. It's in our blood. It's in everyone's blood, to be evil or to be good. And so it's something genetically we hand down. Like, how do we hand down traits? It's in the blood, which speaks to a greater point. Well, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in Jesus. It's like, well, why did Jesus die on a cross? He shed his blood. What blood? Righteous blood, pure blood, a peaceful, loving, forgiving person who's concepts and teachings are just beyond, you know, what we can even imagine, you know, and to do unto others, turn the other cheek, forgive your brother 70 times 7. Incredible stuff. And so his shed blood and sacrifice has always been the path of people trying to spiritually connect and atone for their sins to God. He shed his blood. That's what this week is all about. And so people, you may be skeptical of it, but that blood of Christ can change you, make you born again, make you a new person, change your wiring, how you think. It's not about rehabilitating your behavior, like, hey, be a better Christian, be a better Muslim. No, it's like you've got to be born again, a new creature. It's a spiritual rebirth, an epiphany. And to those that embrace it, you will find salvation. It's worked for me. I can't tell you where I would be without my faith. I've been through situations, relationships have broken up, where I just felt like I would die. I felt like I'd jump off a building. And I have to tell you, I asked God to heal me or to give me sanity, to give me resolution. And it's like, I'm good. It doesn't mean I don't get lonely or depressed, but the point is that thing of like, I got to go out and, you know, find solace in medicating myself or trying to find a drug or another relationship to hide. It's like, it's just not within me. It's so crazy. What is it? It's a spiritual transformation. So to those who are seeking violence to spread their message, I implore you to find salvation through Jesus Christ, through the power of his blood, and find salvation. And it doesn't matter if people believe it or not, but just stating this, putting it out on the air, you know, I can be at peace with myself. We're sharing the good news, the message. That's all we can do. And so I beseech everyone, like, find life through Christ.
The gate is narrow and the chosen are few. I think I kind of mixed those words up a little. The fact of the matter is that I was cultivated around a Christian, you know, family. And I was called to the ministry early at age 4 when I started attending Sunday school. But for those who weren't born into the Christian world, I believe that God calls people. You know, he's called people all over the world, even on BCY America. That Muslims write.
4 is a little young.
They write into
you remember that? You actually remember?
And I remember.
Wow.
I had Psalms 23 memorized by age 5.
Wow. My earliest memory at 4 or 4 and a half was Kennedy getting shot. And I remember I was walking around because there's nothing else to watch on TV. We had these black and white TV, and I remember walking around the neighborhood and going to other houses, and the doors would be open, and the same thing was playing. It was like all the stations had it on. It's like, so I remember playing out in the street, and I liked to play in the gutter, and the people would water their lawns, and the water would run through there, and being a dumb kid, I loved playing with the water, and that was all I could do. I'd go back like an hour later, same thing. It's a funeral procession. You got the horses bringing the body, and then the Jackie, and then her John, and Christine, her Christina, or
Caroline.
Caroline, yeah. And they were like, you know, standing at attention, and it was just like, man, this thing will never end. I was just a kid, but that was my earliest memory.
Well, I was 3. You're a year older than me, and I was 3 when he died, and I don't remember it. I do remember RFK getting shot when I was 8.
Did you? You know what was interesting as a kid growing up? I was kind of I had trouble falling asleep. Like I don't know if it was an insomniac or not, but I remember there was. You know, most people love to go to sleep. Like at my age now, I just love going to sleep. I mean, I can sleep any time, any place, most of the time. But as a kid, it was almost like a horror. It's like, oh, I got to go to bed and I can't fall asleep. And I remember that the night of when RFK got shot, I got up and I couldn't sleep, and I turned on the TV, or the TV was on. I think Mom probably fell asleep or went to bed. But the TV was on in the living room, and I started watching, and around, I don't know, maybe, you know, it was close to midnight, you know, it was probably 11:30 or midnight, and the news flashed that he'd been shot. And I was up all night watching that as a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't much of a TV watcher until about, my first memory of watching a lot of TV was around 6th or 7th grade, like in the summer. I would watch Mary Tyler Moore, the Bob Newhart show, That Girl, stuff like that.
Right.
I wasn't really into cartoons except for Scooby-Doo. And my first political memory was of Richard Nixon saying, "I am not a crook," and resigning. And then the whole Vietnam coverage from like 1973 to 75 was pretty prominent in my head.
What's interesting to me is that we weren't a rich family. I remember probably 1965, 1966, right in that range. I remember those years, and like with cars and the Mustangs and Camaros, and I think Camaro came out in 67, Mustangs like in 1964. But I remember our neighbors who had a little more money, they had color TVs, we didn't. And so for me, the world was black and white until after the moon. And then, you know, when we landed on the moon, although some say we didn't, but I'm going to go with it. We moved to Nebraska, 69, and so when we were there, like between 69 and 70, we got a color TV. So it was like before the moon landing, everything was black and white in my world. And then after that, everything was color. And so it's interesting how culturally, and that's kind of the way things were, you know, in my life. Everything was kind of black and square and, you know, very religious, you know, and when we hit color TV, suddenly, like, we moved back to California, and everything was hip and cool and modern and groovy, and it was different, and color.
Yeah, I remember in fourth grade wearing psychedelic bell-bottom pants, and,
wow,
you know, like, I thought I was pretty cool.
I didn't,
do you remember...
I didn't get bell bottoms till junior high.
People wore like bell bottoms, and then they sewed material on the bottom of their jeans, like different color material to go on the bottom of their jeans.
And some of that too was kind of, I'm not saying the only reason, but some of that came to because with the bell bottoms, kids, a lot of them, they were too long, some of them. And so the heels of their, and people were wearing platform shoes. And a lot of time, especially women, and so when it would rain, those things would get soaked, and then with the heel catching on it and rubbing, they'd start to tear. So people would sew on kind of like extensions to keep it, you know, from not being so ratty. But I didn't. I had straight leg pants, and they used to call it floods. It's like, whoa, is there a flood coming, Yoder? And they would mock me, and because I was always raised in a square church environment.
You were probably too skinny for your age too, right?
Well, yeah, a lot of it was I was very small. There was only two kids smaller than me. Thank God for Larry Suzuki and Thad Aponisevich. Can you believe it? 50 years later, I still know their names. But all through school, as long as they were in school, they were always just a little smaller than me. And so, you know, even though I was a runt, I didn't get the brunt of all the jokes, but at least I had company. And also because we weren't rich, but we weren't also poor, so Mom would make all her clothes, and she would make outfits for Jay, my brother. And then we would get hand-me-downs. So it's like whatever he wore, I'd be wearing. Sometimes she'd make matching outfits. But so everything I got was always bigger. So that's kind of kids nowadays when they have the baggy clothes. To me, growing up, that was a sign that, like, you didn't have money. Like, you had to wear your brother's clothes until you grew into them. And, you know, you didn't get exact fitting stuff until I was in high school where I was working a little and I could afford my own clothes. And one of the first things I got was Angel Flight jeans. and you know, they were tight pants with bell bottoms, and it was the first time I was cool, because up until that time I was wearing floods and I wasn't cool. The only one thing I could say is my brother and I had really short buzz haircuts, because my dad was in the military for a while, and so we would get mocked for that. And then when I was about maybe fourth or fifth grade, I started asking my mom if she would cut my hair. And I started actually not having a crew cut. My brother kept his until high school. And my dad, interesting enough, all his pictures, he had a crew cut. Haircut. It kind of looked like Jerry Springer with a crew cut, or Sergeant Carter from Gomer Pyle. And then when around 69, 70, when we moved to Nebraska, he went to a high school reunion, and he decided to grow his hair longer. And so he won't look so square. And after that, he always kept his hair. He didn't go back to the buzz cut. And every time he'd look at pictures that had him with the crew cut, he'd say, oh, that's when my hair was all, like, you know, old-fashioned. Like, he didn't praise it at all. He was kind of, like, embarrassed for it. But at the time, he was totally into that. And I was kind of the rebel,
well,
first one with long hair.
I was going to say, like, well, my brother was, he turned 18 in 69, and long hair was in back then. Like, men wore hair down to their shoulders. You know, it was
right.
Woodstock and stuff. So I'm surprised you're – well, I know that you came from a religious family, but I guess for boys there's more conformity. But, like, my older sister, she sewed me a pink mini dress in 72, and it had, like, a scarf around my neck. And, like, we were wearing clothes like Twiggy wore, like – the girls in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, didn't have much restriction, and my mom wasn't strict, and I had an older sister that sewed at that time, so I don't feel like my mom restricted our wardrobe at all, you know, but people didn't dress slutty either, like, they didn't wear belly tops, you know, that showed their stomach and stuff.
Right.
So it was fashionable, and yes, there were mini skirts, but it wasn't, I was only 12 or 13. It wasn't, like, slutty. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was so. But here's the funny part about all that is that the fact is, if you live long enough, the point is, years later, bell bottoms were out of date and square. And then you had Michael Jackson coming around, and I'm sitting there going, he's wearing floods. He's got these tight little jeans, you know, that you could see his socks, right? Because he always would dance, and you could see his white socks with black shoes. It's like, that's what kids were mocking me for, that. And here, the coolest man on the planet. I just began to realize, fashion is folly. Like, just keep wearing what you wear, and every 5 to 10 years, you're in style, and then you go out of style, and you come back. But at least you don't have to keep buying a new wardrobe.
Madonna went to the Academy Awards with Michael Jackson in the mid '80s. And she told him he had to change up his wardrobe that night, that he couldn't wear white socks with black pants. I can't remember what he wore, but she yelled at him. So they went as, like, a date, just, you know, to be fashionable and to get attention, sort of.
There was a I was with
the
ministry.
She did tell him that there was a strict protocol. Yeah, go ahead.
I think, let's see, there was even a saying off of that, because I remember I went to this Bible study, and there was a minister's wife, and she was cool. Her name was Michelle. She was totally cool. And she said something like, have you ever heard this saying, I feel like a white sock in something? And I said, no. He said, because, like, you're wearing white socks, you know, and you with short pants, and it just sticks out, like, you know, you should wear colored socks, you know, like black socks or whatever your outfit is, you know, match it. But
see, I didn't have a problem with that Michael Jackson look, because I thought he looked cool. It was kind of like an upgrade from the 50s.
Well, it is, you know, fashion is what's popular, and that's the problem when you make the choice, do you want to be a rock star or a pop star? A rock star is iconic. You know, 30 years from now, you're still basically cool. But if you're a pop star, it changes every couple of years, and you're in, you're out, and you have to keep, you know, morphing to be current.
If I was a woman of high social standing in the mid to late 80s, I would have dated Michael Jackson instead of Prince, because Prince was too over the top for me. And so was people like David Bowie. So, you know, that was the era that things really exploded with gender bender lines. But
yes.
With that, I guess I'm going to have to retitle this show, How Muslim World Modified Our Social Existence or something. So I'm going to tell it to my heart so I can rewrite the show description before I close it out. But with that, I'm still at work, so I'm going to have to bail on you.
Okay,
so,
and by the way, RIP.
Are you
going to
do anything
RIP.
Special for Good Friday, like light a candle?
I was just going to say, people are dropping like flies. Gary Shandling just died at 66. A friend of mine used to work for Ken Howard in the Screen Actors Guild. Ken Howard used to be the White Shadow. He died at 71 just a couple days ago. So,
yeah, a lot of people have died in their 60s this year.
Yeah.
Have you noticed? Like Alan Rickman, who was in Harry Potter, and David Bowie. So they haven't even made it to age 70. That's pretty sad.
Right. So fame and fortune, you know, cannot a long life guarantee.
Well, I know that Gary Shandling guy. I saw him in a couple things. I recognized the face, but I wasn't that close to his career. But it was still sad that he died.
Yeah. I hear you.
So, well, it's just a reminder that life is short. Turn or burn, or turn your heart around. So with that, I'm going to end the episode. I have to look for the music again just a second. Hold on here. Here, bear with me while I get back in the studio because I changed the page already. Or should I? Let me just play the downloaded song. I'll play Hotter Than a Pistol because now that's the only one I have up right now. Just
cool.
Okay. If I can't get back in the studio, I won't be able to play Tell It to My Heart. Okay, I was. I'm going to play Tell It to My Heart. Okay, I'll see ya. I'll text you Happy Easter Sunday, but I don't think we're going to have a show because I'm going out to my cousins in the country. Okay?
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Tell me that it's only
Thank you for listening tonight. We're glad that you were able to join us during Holy Week. We have revised the show content to reflect that we discussed culture too, and how the patterns of the 60s and 70s influenced our thoughts and our behaviors. Thank you, John, for joining us. We played three of your songs, and have a happy Easter. I wish I could be in California.
Good Yay.
Night, John. I will be there by June or August. Pinky
wow.
Thomas.
Cool. We'll keep the
okay,
borders open.
All right. And keep the white crackers in and the foolish voters can be exiled. I'm getting dizzy now, so I better go.
You better
go. Thank you for joining us. Oops, I just made another mistake. Okay, I better go. Okay, thank you, everybody. Let me close this show up before it starts repeating. God bless you all. Bye.
All right.